Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast of the First Christian Church of Pittsfield. The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday school offer for all ages at 9:15. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.
As it says there, I'm Indy Harrison. We're going to talk a little bit about pain and suffering this morning. This is, of course, the last day of July 2022. The last time I was up here was the last day of February 2021. It's not like they're saving the best for last all the time. You know, the people that come here regularly already know that. If there's some visitors here, though, that didn't know that, give us another chance next week, please. You know, this is a good church. You'll have a couple of rewards. Next week is Cookie Sunday, the first Sunday of the month. And also, I'm not going to be up here next week. So you got a good reason to try us again next week. Like I said, we're going to talk about pain and suffering. I see two of our three dentists in the church are here this morning. They're often perpetrators. There are a lot of victims out here, I think, from the noise I heard. So. Well, anyway, I'm going to start the message here, and as Pastor Michael says sometimes, hold on, fasten your seatbelts, because I'm going to try to cover quite a bit of material. We should be out in the normal time, though, but I will have to press on to be able to get there. Some time ago, I read about an ancient manuscript that was uncovered, and the manuscript listed three problems of society in those days. And the problems were taxes were too high, children don't obey their parents, and politicians are crooked. I tried Googling it. I couldn't find that anywhere, so maybe that never really happened. I don't know. But there's another thing I think that we can say that was common with ancient societies and today, and that's the fact that there's pain and suffering, and we don't like it. A couple of years ago, I heard someone was asked the question, "Are you an atheist?" And the person responded, "Yes, I'm an atheist." She said, "I'm an atheist, and I can tell you why I don't believe in God in two words: pediatric oncology." Took me a couple of seconds to digest that, and then later I read a phrase from a British philosopher, Bertrand Russell, that said, "No one can sit at the side of a dying child and still believe in God." So we're going to talk about a serious subject this morning, pain and suffering. It may be something that you've wrestled with and don't see how God can allow pain and suffering in our lives, and maybe that's affected the confidence you have in your Christian faith. Well, if that's the case, I hope I can help you deal with it this morning and maybe give you some things to think about here. So Scripture says that we need a sound faith. 1 Peter 3:15, New International Version says, "Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have." Another way it's worded in New Life Version, "Always be ready to tell everyone who asks you why you believe as you do." So to effectively share your Christian faith, you know, you need to be able to explain it to other people. It should be based on things that you've realized in your own lives. It shouldn't be because someone else believes it or because you trust the preacher. It needs to be something personal with you. And I want to share a situation I had not too long ago with pain and suffering. A lot of you know I had pneumonia, and I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. I had pneumonia just a few months ago. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. One of the things I learned from that experience is I don't really deal all that well with pain and suffering. And if Joyce didn't know it before, she knows now that I don't deal that well with pain and suffering. So when I talk about pain and suffering here, I'm not trying to hold myself out as someone that's really good at toughing it out. And the pain and suffering I had going through that is nothing compared to what so many people go through. C.S. Lewis wrote a book titled The Problem of Pain. And in the preface, he described the book as looking at pain from an intellectual level. And the intellectual level, he put in perspective in the preface to his book when he wrote, "When pain is to be borne, a little courage helps much more than much knowledge. A little sympathy more than much courage. And the least tincture of the love of God more than all." Realizing God's love is effective at helping get through time of pain, much more effective than knowledge or courage or sympathy. But once again, we're going to look at it from an intellectual perspective and try to see if there's any irrationality or any conflict with the existence of pain and our understanding of a loving God. Okay, speaking of pain, you know, you need to know it. If you put your hand on a hot stove or hot burner on a stove, the pain you feel is going to make you pull your hand away and keep you from getting injured worse. That's important that you're able to feel that pain. Likewise, if you break an arm or leg, you're going to have a more severe pain, and that's going to tell you you need to see some medical help with that. So it's important that we experience major and minor pain. They're both important to our well-being and even to our survival. I'm sure you've already recognized. You realize that recognition of pain is important to our well-being, but I want to focus a little bit on some other kinds of pain besides these. Pain like babies and infants and children getting cancer, and people suffering because they never get enough food to eat. So many people living in countries where if their family's starving and they steal a loaf of bread, the law says they get their hand chopped off. So this is where some tough questions are going to come in, and I'm going to try to address those here. You can actually, to expand a little bit on the problem or the conflict we might have, you can break it down into a conditional statement. Conditional statement says, if God really exists, and if God is all-knowing, and if God is all-powerful, and if God is all-good, then pain and suffering should not exist. That seems logical. It seems like it ought to be a true conditional statement. If those conditions exist, then pain and suffering should not exist. So what I want to do is go through these lines here and discuss each one of them. The first one there, of course, is the line there, if God really exists. There was a short exchange that took place a few years ago through correspondence between theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking and Oxford mathematics professor John Lennox. Hawking made the statement that religion is a fairy tale for people afraid of the dark, for people afraid of death. Lennox replied, "Atheism's a fairy tale for people afraid of the light, afraid of being judged." So that's an interesting exchange of thoughts there, but it doesn't really answer any questions. It does show, though, how wish fulfillment can influence our opinions. My mouth gets dry here. My wife doesn't let me talk this much at home, so. Okay, so atheists do not believe God exists. So pain and suffering isn't a problem to an atheist because they don't believe there's a God out there that could ever fix it or make it right. But I want to take just a few minutes here to see what happens if you leave God out of the picture. Richard Dawkins is one of the best known atheists today. He subscribes to Darwin's theory of natural selection, or sometimes called survival of the fittest. He believes that humans are descended from other creatures and that God did not bestow any special qualities in humans, and that humans do not possess a special relationship with God. In his book there, River Out of Eden, Dawkins writes, "In a universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt, other people are going to get lucky, and you won't find any rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice. The universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is at bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, and no good. There is nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. So in other words, he's saying there's no absolute moral principles. There's no such thing as morality. So if somebody decides to crash an airplane into a skyscraper and kill, you know, many innocent people, we can't really blame them for that. That's just what their DNA told them to do. It isn't some moral principle that they should be expected to be following. It's their DNA. Just like if a rock falls on somebody's head and kills them, well, you can't blame the rock. You can't blame gravity. That's just what rocks do. And it's just like that's just what our DNA does. That's kind of where it goes when you leave an absolute morality out of things. So, but of course, the belief there's no absolute moral principles, that conflicts with our Christian faith. Christian faith said God made us special, and there are absolute moral values that he wants us to follow. In the account of creation in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, he says that mankind, not other animals, but mankind was made in God's image. We have the capacity to reflect God's character of love, patience, fairness, compassion, and other traits. And he also gave us free will. He allows us to decide very regularly whether or not we're going to abide by moral laws. So he gave mankind free will, but not other animals. You say other animals follow their instincts and they learn and that affects their behavior, but we can't say they're governed by moral laws. If there's a couple of lions that are in a territorial dispute, you might, and they get in a fight and one of the lions kills the other one, we'd say one lion killed the other one. We wouldn't say one lion murdered the other one. But if two farmers get into a border dispute, a human territorial dispute, and one farmer kills the other one in the end, well, yeah, we would probably say that one farmer murdered the other one. That's the difference in terminology we use, because we attribute humans with the expectation they'll follow moral laws. We don't expect that from animals. They're not governed by moral laws. But humans do have a free will, and they cannot obey moral laws if they want to. And then, of course, the moral laws help determine laws that governments put into place. And then this farmer that we're talking about, he broke moral laws and state laws. Lion didn't break either one of the laws there. So atheists don't have a problem with pain and suffering. They don't believe there's a God out there to stop it. But the thing is, atheism does not get rid of the pain and suffering. What atheism does is gets rid of something else. It gets rid of the hope there is for an eternal relationship with God. With atheism, there's no chance that justice will come to people that endure pain and suffering, and no justice will come to perpetrators of moral evils. In taking away the justice, they just made the suffering worse. And there's clear evidence that suffering is worse here on this planet. Suffering is worse for those with no faith in God. I read a book by a medical doctor that talked about growing up agnostic. His family was agnostic, and as he went on through college, he became an atheist. But then when he went in graduate school to become a doctor there in his third year, he was doing person-to-person interactions with patients, and that began to change him. I'm going to read here 2.5 paragraphs. Going to be up on the board there. 2.5 paragraphs he wrote about a turning point in his life. What struck me profoundly about my bedside conversations with these good North Carolina people was the spiritual aspect of what many of them were going through. I witnessed numerous cases of individuals whose faith provided them with a strong reassurance of ultimate peace, be it in this world or the next, despite terrible suffering that in most instances they had done nothing to bring on themselves. If faith was a psychological crutch, I concluded, it must be a very powerful one. If it was nothing more than a veneer of cultural tradition, why were these people not shaking their fists at God and demanding that their friends and family stop all this talk about a loving, a benevolent, supernatural power? My most awkward moment came when an older woman suffering daily from severe untreatable angina asked me what I believed. It was a fair question. We had discussed many other important issues of life and death, and she had shared her own strong Christian beliefs with me. I felt my face flush as I stammered out the words, "I'm not really sure." Her obvious surprise brought into sharp relief a predicament that I'd been running away from for nearly all my 26 years. I had never really seriously considered the evidence for and against belief. That moment haunted me for several days. Did I not consider myself a scientist? Does a scientist draw conclusions without considering the data? Could there be a more important question in all of human existence than, is there a God? This is a book that was written by Francis Collins, Language of God. He's a well-known and internationally known and well-respected doctor. He headed up the Human Genome Project for most of his existence from 1990 through 2003. And in doing that, he was overseeing the work of thousands of other scientists around the world who were mapping the human genome. Later, he became head of the National Institute of Health, and today he is an advisor scientific advisor to the president. So, but he's a scientist with very strong Christian faith. So he realized the mental health benefits of faith through his person-to-person interaction with patients while he was in medical school. Other studies of large groups have also confirmed mental and physical benefits of faith in God. Here's a couple of them I came across. In the majority of studies, this is according to the American Journal of Public Health, in the majority of studies, religious involvement is correlated with well-being, happiness and life satisfaction, hope and optimism, purpose and meaning in life, higher self-esteem, better adaptation to bereavement, greater social support and less loneliness, lower rates of depression and faster recovery from depression, lower rates of suicide and fewer positive attitudes towards suicide, less anxiety, less psychosis and fewer psychotic tendencies, lower rates of alcohol and drug use and abuse, less tendency in criminal activity and greater marital stability and satisfaction. That's a pretty nice list. And I'll go on here. There's an article in Christianity Daily that reported on scientists at Ohio State University. They studied over 500 obituaries that were published in the Des Moines Register newspaper in early 2012. And those obituaries that included people with religious affiliations averaged lives 6.48 years longer than those without. And there was another study of over 1,000 obituaries from 42 major United States cities. And in those obituaries, people with religious affiliations averaged 3.82 years longer than those without. So one of them's about 6.5 years, and the other is 3.8 years longer for people with religious affiliations. I came across all kinds of information like this, but I don't have time to share any more of it. I gave you a couple of them there. Realize, though, that Christian faith doesn't guarantee any freedom from afflictions. It doesn't guarantee health or happiness or long life or anything like that. If things worked that way, what we'd be doing is bargaining with God. We'd be giving our declaration of faith in return for freedom from pain and suffering. But God doesn't bargain like that. As a well-known book, and quite a few years ago, the title of the book says, "Bad Things Happen to Good People." And it really does. But regardless, I wanted to point out that statistically, there does seem to be an earthly reward for faith in God. And finally, you all know the story in the book of Luke with the two thieves that were crucified with Jesus. And one of the thieves joined the crowd in hurling insults at Jesus. The other one recognized who Jesus was. And that was the one that Jesus said would be with him that day in paradise. Okay, now which one of those thieves hanging on the cross had a lot of their pain and suffering relieved? Okay, so I discussed here if line one on the conditional statement is not true, if God does not exist, I carry that on a little bit. The second line there, can you bring that slide back up? There you go. We talked about that, if God really exists. So the second line there, if God is all-knowing, you know, then so forth, pain and suffering should not exist. Well, if God's not all-knowing, we can't really blame him for not getting rid of our pain and suffering. He doesn't know about it. He exists. He's all-powerful. He's all-good. But if he doesn't know we're suffering, we can't be upset about pain and suffering existing. So that's why it's important that we do have a faith, and we do believe, though, that God is all-knowing. So that contributes to the conundrum we have here. And then the third line down, if God is all-powerful. Well, once again, if God exists, he's all-knowing and he's all-good, but he's not capable of getting rid of pain and suffering. Well, we can't blame him for that either, I guess, if he doesn't have the capability to do it, to get rid of pain and suffering. But once again, our Christian faith says that statement's true too. So God really exists, he's all-knowing, he's all-powerful, and he's all-good. Okay? Let me go down here then to the issue if God is all good. So we don't have a problem, like I said, if God is not all good. In other words, we don't have a problem if we think God likes it when we suffer. That would explain why there's pain and suffering. But of course, that's not our view of God. We feel like he loves us and he cares about our pain and suffering, and he doesn't want us to suffer. That's what helps create the conundrum here. But the fact is, of course, God is all good, but we're not. And the bad we do a lot of times causes the pain and suffering. We do bad because God gave us free will. Then you might think, well, why did God give us free will? That just leads to trouble. Wouldn't everything be better if we all just did good, and then we maybe wouldn't have pain and suffering? Well, the thing is, God did have the ability to create us like that. He would have the ability to have created us to do only good. That would eliminate the problem. But he gave us free will, and he didn't make us robots. He knew he was creating us with the capacity to either love him or not love him. And love doesn't mean anything unless there's also the possibility of not love or of hate. We should be able to understand that. That's one of the ways we're made in God's image. We want others to choose to have relationships with us. You know, when I go home from work and see Joyce, I don't want to go home there and push a button that says kiss, and she gives me a kiss. And I don't want to push a button that says love, and she tells me she loves me. I want her to choose to do those things. That's what relationships are all about. It's what makes us human. So once again, God gave us free will. He wants us to choose good. We have the freedom, though, to choose bad. And those bad choices do get us into trouble, and they can cause pain and suffering. But bad choices aren't the only source of pain and suffering. You know, I gave examples of babies and infants and children with cancer. And you could add to that, you know, natural disasters like flooding and fire, earthquakes, tsunamis, and rocks falling on people's heads. You know, pain and suffering can come from events outside our control and from outside violations of moral laws. So as I said, Christian faith doesn't guarantee our freedom from afflictions. We can't make a bargain with God in exchange for our afflictions going away. God just doesn't bargain like that. But and so we may not like it, but whether we're Christians or not, we're going to face pain and suffering. What we do have, though, as Christians, is we have a God that understands. We know that because God did not remain distant from our pain and suffering. At the heart of Christianity is the cross, and the cross is where there was Jesus, God come down to earth, and he had pain and suffering like probably none of us will ever have to endure. And also, at the heart of Christianity is an empty tomb that tells us that death is not the end, and that there will be a final justice, a final judgment, and justice will be served. So we do have a God that understands. He became part of our pain and suffering. So going on our conditional statement there, maybe there's an element or two that we should add to that, because it still maybe seems like it could seem like a conundrum sometime. One of the things we should probably add to that is the factor of time. Human views and perceptions of time are way different than God's views and God's perceptions on things. Just consider these things here. 165 years ago, the United States Supreme Court ruled that the Constitution was not meant to include rights and privileges to people of African descent. It was only 102 years ago that the 19th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified, that finally allowed women nationwide to vote. 60 years ago, read an article about Cassius Clay coming back from the Rome Olympics as light heavyweight boxing champion, came back to Louisville, where there were whites-only water fountains. And a lot of businesses and public places had three restrooms: men, women, colored. And so, but there can be people, you know, just make sure we don't think we have our act all together today also well, you know. There could be people 40 or 50 years from now, there could be people whose grandchildren come up to them and say, "Grandma, did you used to go to the store and buy meat that came from animals that were raised just so you could eat them and kill them? Or kill them and eat them? Let me give them in the right order here. Just so you could kill them and eat them? Or Grandpa, did you really used to go to sporting events where men would run down the field at full speed at each other and crash into each other, knowing it caused brain injuries? You know, we don't know how things are going to change over time. You know, there's been bigger change than those little things I just mentioned there. And by the way, I want you to know, I'm not against eating meat. I'll eat about anything in the meat counter, and I watch football games, so I'm not trying to act like I've got it all together there. But time does change our human perspective on things. And it's hard for us to understand, but God is outside of time. He knows eternal rights and wrongs. You know, parents take their children to the doctor to get shots. Immunizations against disease, or maybe shots to cure an existing disease. The shots can hurt, and a child normally doesn't really understand why we're inflicting more pain on them right then. Once again, we're doing it, though, because in the end, we feel like it'll be in the child's best interest if they have the shot. So God's outside of time. Maybe we're like that child who only sees the immediate pain without really seeing the long-term good. And then one more thing I want to add to the conditional statement here about pain and suffering, and that's maybe we should add the concept there of God's wisdom. In the book of Job, in the Bible, we read about how Job suffers tremendous physical and psychological pain, and he cries out to his friends, and he cries out to God, why he doesn't know why he has to suffer so much. And God replies here in chapter 38 of Job, Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone? While the morning stars sang together for all the and all the angels shouted for joy. There's 77 questions for Job, when God speaks there in Job chapters 38 through 41, those questions tell Job, and they tell us with a little bit of sarcasm in them, how little we actually do know. There's a whole lot we know we don't know now, but I do feel like someday Christians will have a better understanding of things that we don't understand today, understanding of pain and suffering, and fairness, and justice, and also, I believe, forgiveness. And with that, I'm going to close here with a word of prayer. God, we thank you for the time we have to worship together here this morning. Thank you for the church and the relationships we have with one another. Thank you for putting the people in each one of our lives who helped us realize the importance of developing a relationship with you. Thank you for loving us, for wanting relationship with us. Thank you for sending your son to take our sins with him to the cross, to suffer and die for all believers. Please help us to think about our relationship with you in all we do this coming week. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.